Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Second Act Actors. I'm your host, Dr. Janet McMorty, and I'm still a medical doctor simultaneously to run and pursue a career in acting. My guest this week is Barbara Barna Abel. Try say that five times fast. She is an absolutely fabulous media coach, life coach, career consultant. She does so many cool things, and this is such an inspiring, wonderful conversation. She has a really interesting niche when I was researching her a bit, because I mean, as you all know, there are a million kajillion billion people out there who identify themselves as life coaches, acting coaches, media coaches, or whatever. She is legit one of those. She's not a scammer, obviously, but she has a really cool program that's really focused towards hosting, towards online hosting, TV hosting, stuff like that, coaching for that type of, to be honest, acting, because that's what it is. And so I really love talking to her. I love jiving with her. Please enjoy the incredibly lovely Barbara Barna Abel. Story. Tell me how you got into doing what you do and what you do.
Well, how I got into what I do is how many people get into what I do is I fell into it. So what I do now is I am a media coach and I specialize in helping people, all sorts of people, communicate through a lens. And, you know, I've been saying this for 12, 15 years. But when the pandemic hit, people started to really understand how important it is and that we are already all of us on camera, whether we think that we're on camera or not, whether we are performers or not, whether we are in front of the camera or behind the camera type people, whether we are above the line or below the line. Because believe it or not, even a decade ago, far north of 90% of job interviews already had a video component. Right? It's always a big part of jobs. And now satellite offices. So even way before Zoom calls and Skype, we were communicating via remote ways to, you know, other people we worked with through satellite calls. And there's just a bunch of different ways. And then all of us being on social media and FaceTiming with family members, and we've all been doing it. So it is a crucial part of how we communicate. And then by extension, I help people in a variety of ways. So that's, communication in general. What's your story? And by extension, on a business level, what's your brand? How are you living your brand? Very important that in the acting space, I am a huge believer. We cannot separate our being from our doing. So it's about so much about connecting to our physical selves, our emotional selves, our spiritual selves, and all the different ways that we show up. And how do we present ourselves? And then across a variety of platforms. So once you know that your story and who you are and I don't know, your calling and your purpose and your message and your superpowers and all those things are sort of internalized and understood, then we can get very specific into how are we delivering that information across which platform. So that can be as we're doing through a remote call, that can be on a stage, giving a keynote speech or a TED talk, any kind of presentation. Linear, your legacy television, cable TV, any kind of digital. I think I've waffled on forever, so sorry about that. But that's what I do. And I still work as well as a talent executive for entertainment and media companies. And my specialty was always, prior to this, was casting in the nonfiction or factual space. Lots of hosts, experts, subject experts, people transitioning, funny enough, with your website, your podcast, same thing as people transitioning from one career to another. I work with a lot of people who transition, sports, athletes, models, actors. But a lot of actors have transitioned or, you know, made it part of their portfolio. I'll stop talking now because I think I went on forever.
It's interesting about story, right? And I think, and I wonder what your opinion is of this, because I've noticed, at least during the pandemic, there's been a lot more focus, I think, on people telling their story. I wonder if that has always been the case, people wanting to tell their story, but I've just noticed it over the pandemic because I finally had time to kind of open my ears to other stories from being, you know, in a life of just like kind of like chaos and rush. But do you notice, have you noticed over the last couple years, more people wanting to do storytelling and getting their, again, their story out into the world?
Yeah. So the short answer to your question is yes, but you also tapped into something. I think during the pandemic, people had time to stop and start to think about, well, as long as I'm, you know, stuck inside, you know, how can I work on myself or what can I learn? So the need to tell stories obviously goes back to the dawn of humankind, right? We, you know, telling stories and sitting around campfires and in pictograms. There's a reason why listening to the news, it's the story coming up. It's not the segment, the clip, the video. It's the story. You know, reading fashion magazines, I always for years loved, you know, it's a color story. It's a, you know, sweater story. So the need to tell stories, and it's the crux of advertising, has always existed. It's just that many of us are paying more attention. And then also, again, digital boom, our access to this information has grown. So in a lot of pockets where storytelling classes might have been regional, now you can tap into them from wherever you are. And I think just a lot of things, you know, proliferated around this same time. It's always been there. It's always been important. I just think, to your point, it kind of hit critical mass.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So tell me what happens, like, who is the person who seeks out your help? Who does that look like usually?
That I have a few different sort of profiles. So, and one of the core things I really believe in is the notion of access and access to information. Again, it's like, you know, I'm very purpose-driven that way. It's part of what your podcast does, right? Mm-hmm. It allows people access to information to that people may not have had. And that in turn leads to actually action, but also shifts in belief. The idea that, yes, I could really do this. So on one level, and a lot of free content I put out with my own podcast and the information on social media and my newsletter, et cetera, is, you know, to people who are curious or have had a dream. And so many times I refer to people as dreamers. It's like, I've always dreamed of doing this thing. I'm like, that is awesome. I love and respect that. So you are welcome in. And that is, you know, sort of the first step, as you are well aware. But you don't get anywhere unless you, like, you know, you're growing, you're dedicated, you get involved in training, you show up consistently, you work through the uncomfortable and messy parts. And especially if you're transitioning to acting, which is such an exploration of the self, that can get very, very uncomfortable and vulnerable. So as you work through that, my, you know, next step is who comes to me is are people who transition from dreaming to doing. And I love, love, love. So the core of the people I work with are doers. And that can be any sort of person who, you know, wants from the traditional hosting side to I work with a lot of individual subject experts, entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, all sorts of people who need to be able to share their ideas with the world to A, make it a better place and to grow their businesses and to have an impact. So that is the most of the people I work with because, and then for, you know, obvious stumbling reasons, it brings up all sorts of vulnerabilities with people. So that's what we work on, you know, a lot was not only like, what's your messaging, but working through, the blocks and the limiting beliefs, which is one of the reasons years ago, I became certified as a professional coach to be able to support people through this, not only to be able to identify, like, I think this is, you know, getting in your way, but like now we can work through this. So I combine the modalities. And then the sort of third category or individual I work with is somebody I call a game changer. That's someone who's been doing for a long time and then is making impact on a profound level. And that's all sorts of people. I mean, I feel teachers make a huge impact. You know, people who just have ideas and are taking them out there in a big way.
What do you notice? Is so limiting belief is something that I never had in my vocabulary until I started taking acting classes. And my internet went funky there. You still there?
I'm totally here. I can hear everything you said.
Awesome. I'll redo the question. So yeah, limiting beliefs was a phrase that I had never heard until I started acting classes. And I kind of went, oh, this is something I have a lot of. and I need to, yeah, kind of that like break through them as a kind of a, like a, again, a barrier to progress going forward. What have you noticed? Have there been any kind of overarching themes or similar limiting beliefs in the people you've worked with? Like kind of a, what's the word I'm looking for? Like common limiting beliefs that seem to be a barrier.
No, that's a great question. They're common blocks, limiting beliefs, false assumptions, any of those stories that we tell ourselves that get in the way. So, you know, one, it just the you know, granddaddy of them all is that I'm not good enough. So there's a lot of imposter syndrome. There's a lot of compare and despair, as my friend Aliza Licht says, so that we constantly look at what other people are doing. And not only do we compare ourselves, but then we get really down on ourselves. And these things exist at all levels. There's also just really intense attachment that we all get into how things should be done. And I'm a big believer. One of my platforms is, you know, stop shoulding yourself. Stop using the word should. Remove it from your vocabulary. But just, you know, and so at the end of the day, a lot of it, what is fear-based, that I'm going to fail. And then attachment to what now becomes comical to me, but I understand it's like really wild things. Like, you know, if I use my hands incorrectly or I don't master this thing, it's just going to be terrible. And it's not dissimilar, you know, having worked with actors the same way. It's like, you know, when we're nervous going into a role and we start to attach to like, the costume is all wrong. The lighting's all right. Anyway, because we project all our anxiety onto that other thing. But so the crux of it is that, to answer the thing, I mean, they're all fear-based. A lot of it's that I'm not good enough. There's no matter what I'm doing, I'm not going to be able to master this. You know, fear of shame, fear, a big one, especially when I work with executives, is the fear of saying the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. And that is... now does have some different consequences in terms of cancel culture or saying the wrong thing and it affecting stock price. So that's a, you know, a genuine concern. But so that becomes a notion of where the coaching side is really important, is so that we acknowledge the anxiety and the fear, but we shift from being focused on the fear to focus on the empowerment conversation. So then we break it down. So it's like, when I do all these things and I have prepared, because again, this is where I talk about acting all the time. It's like an actor, Helen Mirren, who I just think is a goddess, does not wake up in the morning and say, Shakespeare, done it, sleeping in. Been there, done that. I'm just going to, you know, waltz in, I don't know, 15 minutes before the play starts. Never, never, never. An actor would never approach anything that way. But in the spaces I inhabit, many people get confused and think that this is just talking. And then it requires no preparation. We're communicating. We're sharing ideas. Everything is a transference of energy, right? So it takes thought and preparation. And so when you back up and understand it that way, going, okay, this is the result I would love to have. This is how I would define success in this situation. Like if I get these words out and I touch people and I make an impact, that will feel really good. And I'm gonna go, okay, great. So what do we need to do to get there? So part of that, right, it takes intention, thought, consistency, does take practice. And then that shows up in a variety of ways. That gets into the same thing with an actor. An actor doesn't go out cold. You're going to warm up. You warm up your voice. You warm up your body. I have to teach people that in the talking space. These things are all interconnected.
That's really interesting, because my next question would be like, who needs a media coach? And how is it different from learning like public speaking skills, like Toastmasters or something like that?
Excellent question. Okay, so I'm going to say that everyone needs a media coach, and not just necessarily in the self-serving sense. But again, going back to Dame Helen or any number of people, great actors, great opera singers, elite athletes work with coaches their entire lives, right? Because we're constantly training, we're constantly working to go deeper, better, challenge, develop, always. So one is to take any kind of notion that the idea that if you need a coach, it implies that you are less than or not good enough or that there's some sort of failure. No, coaching is about helping you aspire to get to your highest, best self. So that's really, really important. So everybody can use media coaching. And it's interesting because I do work with many well-known people that you would, whose names you would recognize, who are super successful, and they understand the preparation that is required. So even though they are already hugely impactful speakers and communicators across a variety of platforms, they, you know, will call and say, I'm doing this thing. Now let's prepare, because we're trying to figure out what are the right words. What's the, you know, how are we meeting this audience where they are? What's the impact that we want to have? Is this being shot or presented in a way I have never done this thing before? So there's that. Two, the other thing that you're asking, like from Toastmasters, so Toastmasters, Toastmasters, so they're training to do public speaking in a specific way, in a pretty consistent, specific situation, which is awesome, right? When someone comes to me, we're looking at how do we transfer those skills? Because how you speak to an audience on a that in a stage in that kind of situation is different than you're going to communicate with people in other situations, i.e. that's why a keynote and a TED Talk are not the same, to help people adapt. But also same thing, if you're coming from a public speaking and now you're going to do something on camera somewhere, you have to learn, and we talked about this before we start recording, you have to learn to, you know, speak down the barrel of the lens, because you're always only speaking to one person. So the idea that it's presentational and that we're working the room no longer works. And then it seems like you're distracted and you don't know where you are. So we look at all adapting to the technology, to the situation, to the audiences. Linear television, you know, old fashioned, I shouldn't say old fashioned, but you know, I mean, traditional linear television, which would be cable or broadcast, is often shot from a distance. Digital is much more intimate. So, right, so your energy shifts, how you're connecting with the audience shifts, you know, much tighter shot versus, you know, your whole body, all those things matter. So that's, as a media coach, we're going to tap into that. What kind of impact? How are you feeling? Check in with yourself. But part of it really starts with, you know, what's the goal? Who's the audience? What's the platform? How do you speak to this audience via this platform to achieve the goal?
It's interesting you mentioned about, you know, yeah, Helen Mirren, of course, she'd never go in cold. Actors never go in cold. You know, as we were mentioning at the beginning, you know, I chat with a lot of people, myself included. I mean, I didn't grow up being an actor. I didn't go to theater school. There's kind of this weird assumption, and I think it's an assumption that it goes with a lot of creative careers, that you don't really, you know, like exactly what you're saying, you don't really need to practice or coach, because it's an innate, natural thing that should just come out of you organically, which is BS. I know that now. But there's a weird feeling of, I agree with you, like, oh, you need coaching for that? But so-and-so down the road was just discovered in a mall and it just comes out of them naturally. What are your thoughts on that, having worked with people from such a wide spectrum of careers?
Well, there are absolutely people who've walked into my office for castings where you feel it. They've got the it. But any kind of it, whatever that your talent is, needs to be developed and nurtured and honed and matured. So that's where I talk about athletes all the time, because people come in with phenomenal natural talent. You know, look at the Williams sisters, who I've always admired. And then, you know, their first coach just passed away. Right. That talent has to be developed. And the same thing, you know, if anybody's a baseball fan, because that becomes an easy example, you can, if you're someone who pitches, a phenomenal pitcher, it's the coach and the training that will help you be able to coach, to, you know, throw that, those strikes consistently, as opposed to once in a while, because you have to be able to then learn to control your gift and, you know, turn it on and off, and also, you know, amplify it or shape shift it. So that's one of the reasons why, when there's something there, it's to be, you know, nurtured and honored and respected and developed. The other thing too, with when people shy away too, is I think that when we're coming, it could be at any age, but often when we're coming to something late, or we don't feel we have that innate talent because it wasn't validated externally, like other people our whole lives were not saying, oh, you're so amazing at this thing, you should do it. So now there's fear, there's shame. And so it's uncomfortable, because you're like, if I go get training, I'm having to admit to myself and others that I really want to do this thing that I might not be very good at. And I'm living in anxious fear of the embarrassment when the whole world can say, What do you think you're doing? And that's a massive thing that I think most of us as humans have to work through.
And so how do you, because I know you mentioned to me prior to us coming on here, that you do a lot of work with people who are changing career paths.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any advice for people who are experiencing that? Because you probably saw me kind of laughing and smiling because everything you said was like, yep, 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 present and accounted for. Do you have any advice?
Okay, there are a couple of books I recommend that everyone needs to read. One is Taming Your Gremlin by Rick Carson, who's like the OG of getting out of your own way. So I think it first came out decades ago, like 30, 40 years ago. It's a very, very sweet, gentle book. And Taming Your Gremlin is really the name he gives to your subconscious. And the idea that we have to become friends with our subconscious, because our subconscious always wins. And so if we're not aware of it, we're kind of sunk already. So that's why it's a taming, because you can never beat it. But it's, so there's a lot of awareness around that. Another wonderful game-changing book to me was What to Say When You Speak to Yourself, When You Talk to Yourself, Shad Helmstetter. And it's really, again, simple and beautiful, because how the messages that we give ourselves that we would never say to somebody else are terrible. So the big thing is, I think it's universal, and it happens throughout our lives. The big thing is catching yourself. Right. And so you're constantly the self-awareness of checking in, going and either stopping, going, that was a very nice thing I just said to myself. Or is that true? So that's a beginning just in terms of in general. And then the other is to, you know, the bigger question is, you know, like, why do you want to do something? That's awesome. It's like, that's where a lot of the emotional coaching is, like, you know, follow your thing. Why do you want to do it? How are you going to get there? And it's really sort of growing into the bravery of standing in your own light, right? And then, because part of the deep thing is the why. It's like, if you're looking for external validation, if you're looking the constant quest to still get the love you might not have gotten as a child, or whatever that is, or, you know, the mythic, you know, boy or girl from middle school that never quite loved you, you know, all those things that we all carry around with us. What I'm getting at is to have the awareness around that, going, no, do it for yourself. Don't do it for that, and the growth around that. So, but my point is, like, if the pandemic taught us anything, life is freaking short. If this brings you joy, go for it. And then also, just, I mean, my belief in acting, and I send everyone for, you know, basic acting training anyway, because the connection to yourself, to learning to be like in body, how do I breathe? What is my posture? How do I project? These are just wonderful, wonderful life skills.
Take me through how, like, if somebody reaches out to you, how do you, like, you kind of mentioned briefly before about starting the process working with you, but what does that kind of look like? They reach out to you, what goes forward, kind of, what's the day like with you? What's the week like, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, not to be a pain in the neck, but it does vary by person, because everything I do is super customized and bespoke. I'm a big believer in it's not one size fits all. But to answer your question, I mean, it really does start by asking, you know, why are you coming to me? What's your goal? How can I help you and serve you? What do you feel like is getting in the way? What's been your experience? And so that varies in the different kind of services I provide, because I've worked with some people who come, I have an idea and help them, and maybe we'll work together for a year to go from idea to execution. And so that gets into everything, like how to build a deck and preparing to go to pitch meetings and all these things that interconnect my professional work experience together, as well as, you know, the messaging and the communication side and the branding and the social media side. Some people, it's to prepare for a thing. Maybe that's an audition. Maybe that's going out on a book tour, giving a TED talk, presentations. So it does vary. And so it depends on, I do get panic calls all the time. You're like, oh my God, the speech is on Saturday and it's Thursday. I'm like, okay, I might have thought about this 3 months ago, but we're here now. So how we handle that is one way, because then we'll look at, again, I'm always going to ask, what's the goal? How will you know you have succeeded? A big thing to move people away from is the idea of getting all the words right. is the measure of success. So it's a lot about letting go of perfection, because no one is ever showing up for your perfect except for you. Everybody shows up for the value that you bring to them in their lives. Like, it's even when you go to watch a play or a TV show, it's so rare that you would say that was a perfect performance. We think about it, it's like the value that we got, the pleasure, the joy, whatever we learned, whatever about that experience is why we've shown up. And then unless we're highly trained, we're not looking at the technical, right? So that's what I'm getting at. So we want to take away. So it's like the words are important. All of it's important. But the most important thing is how we show up and understanding how we're going to connect the impact that we want to make. And so to define, you know, success around that was like, you know, if I make someone's day, if I change a life, if I connect, that'll be awesome. And then we're like, okay, how are we going to do that? So part of it. And then getting, you know, super in the weeds, because you're asking a really fair question, often happens is to help people translate the written word into the spoken word. Because a huge problem, and I see it all over media, is people speaking for the page. They've taken written text and trying to communicate it as it was written on the page, but it wasn't written for the ear. So there are a lot of things that we would never say. A famous one I always come up with is a bajillion years ago, I cast the show Man vs. Food. With Adam Richman, who, again, somebody who comes in from the beginning, he had to go through 10 million auditions. He was amazing and singular every time. So anyway, but the original copy said, we shot the pilot at Tony Luke's, which is this fabulous place for cheesesteak in Philadelphia, among other things. But it said they've been making juicy, delicious Philadelphia cheesesteaks for over a quarter of a century, which makes sense on the page if I was writing marketing materials. But nobody says that. It's 25 years when we're talking to each other, because otherwise, so that's just fundamental, right? But one of the reasons it's important, if people are trying to understand why am I getting like persnickety, is because what happens is you lose your audience when they have to translate. They're pausing to actually go they meant 25 years. And so it gets on. So the power of direct language, because if you confuse, you lose. I'm quoting Marie Forleo. And another book I recommend that's brand new is Smart Brevity from the people at Axios, because they're spot on with the notion of, you know, don't get clever. Don't get hung up on clever when we're communicating. I mean, wit and humor are awesome. But I meant, you know, $10 words when just one syllable will do. But so anyway, that's a big thing I help people with. And then also translating into what are your cadences? How do you speak? Because when I started in the dark ages, you know, pre-social media, pre-digital, there was one way to, you know, read a teleprompter. And that was, you looked a certain way and you read a teleprompter a certain way and you hit your beats a certain way. And if you could do that, you could be a host or a presenter. And now that's completely out the window, because that reads completely inauthentic. Right. We crave people communicating with us. We're desperate to make a communication, you know, to make connection.
It's so interesting, the evolution of it. And it must be like, how do you keep up with, like, would you call it like trends of communication? Like, how do you keep up with all of that?
Yes, we call it trends. And then just communication and culture evolves, right? And by the way, we see the same thing though in acting styles. Like, just going back and watching classic films, right? And things that might seem sort of like arch now. And even sometimes, I see it sometimes in theater where, you know, you're seeing different acting styles collide, right? And naturalism versus a more formal. So anyway, there's that. But I really cut my teeth, especially on the casting and coaching side, working at MTV Networks in the 90s. I ran the talent development department at VH1. And I bring that up because MTV changed the culture completely by how we communicate. And what they did, which blows my mind that the whole world doesn't know this or adapt this, is they took the scripts out of the teleprompter and only put in bullet points, which made the VJs have to connect the information conversationally. And it became this idea of being conversational. So I spent a lot of time with corporate clients trying to explain to them that this copy that was approved by 50 people that came maybe, you know, from advertising and marketing, it will never be conversational because of, like, you know, the Tony Luke's example I gave earlier. So there's that. But so part of that was a communication evolution, and then digital comes and things become, our culture's way more casual. It's way more intimate. None of that means that it has to be unprofessional or less professional. It just has to do with we're less formal. We are more casual. And that makes a difference then when we get into global communication, because not everybody is as informal as we are. And we need to remind ourselves of that. And I'm an American speaking to a Canadian. And so Canadians are, you know, you're warm and friendly, but way more polite than your average American. So one is keeping up now, even on global communication and working with clients who are international and working with international companies, and how even do employees speak to each other. So there's that. But so yes, so it's one of my favorite things, though, kind of on a nerdy level, is keeping up. It's like, how has this evolved? What is the going thing? And then on top of that, then how is that going to work for any individual? Because you have to be true to who you are. And so there's some people who are much more formal and presentational, and that can absolutely work. Absolutely. And then there are others who are, you know, just, I don't know, letting it all hang out. So, you know, there's kind of a scale, but it's way less formal than when I started. Even when I started, got out of college, I mean, there was one resume. Right? It didn't matter if you're working in finance or entertainment. It all looked the same. It was on, you know, cream paper. If you're really kind of going out there, you might get beige. But now, right? It's all of it. Doesn't matter what industry you're in. It's always about telling your story on that piece of paper, whether you're an actor or in finance. How do you tell your story? And by the way, I know I'm going off on a tangent, but I've worked with a number of actors and really, really helping give themselves permission to explore how can I tell my story differently, because the hosting and factual side that I come from is so much newer. There's still, you know, a little bit of Wild West, but acting, the protocols are very, very deeply entrenched. So, and their formats and their templates and their right ways to do things. But every now and again, it's okay to push the boundaries a little bit if it's going to be impactful, or how are you telling your story? It doesn't mean going out there and being way out there for the sake of that, but it means you know, giving yourself permission to, like, I don't have to be hemmed in. I get a lot from people, am I allowed to do that? I'm like, first of all, thank you for thinking I'm the omnipotent one, but it's not up to me. We always have to ask ourselves, I don't know, am I allowed to do that? You know, who's the gatekeeper? And you really want to ask is, you know, again, what's the goal? Why am I trying to do this? What's the result I want from this? Is it offensive? Is it illegal? You know, is it rude? And if the answer is no, then go, well, okay, how can I best execute this?
Do you think it has to do, well, I know you mentioned cancel culture before. I know we have a mutual acquaintance in Vinny Potestivo, who we had an amazing conversation about youth culture, kind of changing everything, putting the power into youth. And then my thought was the youths have such, I don't want to say poor attention span, because that's a negative thing, but it's definitely a reality, I know, in the acting world. If you even look like you were, you know, you compare acting styles from back in the day till now, or even like films from back in the day till now, our attention spans are so much shorter. So they're like quick cutting back and forth with different scenes so quickly now these days. Mm-hmm. Do you find that is something is that the reason why there's an informality, is because everything's just so quick that you can't be formal?
No, I actually don't think they have anything to do with each other, but it's an interesting connection that you're making, because I really think that, MTV led the way, because that was, you know, the 90s are really the last time we had a monoculture where, you know, like, so if you lived in the United States and you were a teenager at that time or in middle school, you came home and you watched TRL. Like, it's a shared experience. And then it just started to trickle out, because it started to impact how other media communicated. And in the United States, it drives culture. So there's that. I don't even know. It's interesting what you refer to as youth culture, because I was born in the 1960s when there was the first sense of a youth quake. And I don't know that youth culture drives as much now as we think it does. I still think that, like, the big guys, meaning Google/Alphabet, the metaverse, etc., you know, deciding what's what. But to your point, I actually think I think it's actually digital technology that has led to shorter attention spans because we have all this immediacy and content started to get shorter. So I think that drives it more. And then two, it's also the impact of gaming, which I appreciate gaming, but look at how many films are either based on games or are now shot and cut to reflect the expectation of how games work and how we interact with games. So I think that is really, really important. And then finally, in ways that I think are actually positive and productive, we start to understand you can say a lot with fewer words in a less amount of time. I mean, Twitter, God rest, taught us, for a lot of us, it was a good writing exercise. Can I express this in what was originally 180 characters and then got to 240 or whatever it is? So that was a good training. But so the same thing happens in, when you're creating content on social media or you're a young storyteller and a filmmaker, whether you're making, shorts or a feature length film, it was like, I don't need as much exposition as I would have thought in the past. I don't have to explain as much, as there's so many tools to visual storytelling and the audience comes along. So I think to answer your question, because I thought it was a really valid question, I think it's an intersection of a bunch of those things at once. And yes, we have, and then part of our collective short attention has to do with we have so much incoming. Part of that too is the fact that that the data on that is pretty conclusive about just how many messages we get per day. That we didn't have the rate of acceleration in our culture, all of us globally, is massive. That if you were frozen in like the year 900, you could have been thawed out in 1100. And not a lot would have changed. Like you could have just picked up where you left off, just new people. Then stuff happens around the printing press and the Industrial Revolution. Now, then we're getting to 100-year cycles. Now we're in like 5-year cycles where it doesn't matter what you do. So that's both good news and bad news. The good news is like we can all jump on the carousel anytime because, nobody's an expert forever. We're all constantly having to learn this stuff and it's really fast. But the downside, obviously, it's like really overwhelming. And on any given moment, you were like, holy, get me off of this thing. It's like, George Jetson. Right?
It's funny because that's exactly the reason why I think people would need somebody like a media coach, because I know, especially as I gain great wiseness and maturity in this world, I start realizing this merry-go-round is going very fast. And I need a little help. I need a little help with that.
To that point, that's a reminder too about the permission slip that it's okay to rest. It is okay to stop. That challenge the voice in your head that's always, I should, and ask, okay, really, should I? So because first of all, we all need it, physically, emotionally, psychically, spiritually, whatever have you, the body needs rest. And so to, put stuff down. And I'm feeling it this year. And I think thematically, I'm seeing it a lot of places is, don't go hard for the end of the year, go gentle. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a favorite moment in your career?
I have moments. Wow. That's a great question. They're different, like really wonderful, wonderful moments. I did lots of things that happened at VH1. I had wonderful moments working. I created the original RuPaul show. So just, Ru coming out on stage at the first VH1 Fashion Awards and just different things like sort of coming together were really wonderful moments. There are aspects too of, working on Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, where that was just like, what an incredible moment. There are also just, there's so many little things. It's a sweet question that you ask, because every now and again, to watch a client somewhere and to see, to know where they started and to see the connection, and then to get it, it's really wonderful. And sometimes it's years later, I just got a note recently for someone who booked their dream gig and it's been, it took 5 years and they're so happy and they're so fantastic doing it. So those are just joyful moments for me. They're often sometimes just in the middle of a training where I'm like, I'm so aware that this is where I'm supposed to be and I love it.
Oh, that's a lovely feeling. I think that's That's kind of like the crux of why I'm doing this podcast, right? And celebrating the people who've made choices like that, because that feeling of this is what I'm meant to be doing and it was missing before. I think that's, I you know, when you start to feel that, I know it's almost like a privilege to feel that, because I know a lot of people don't get that. And yeah, it's exciting. That's wonderful. I got to ask, just from your time in casting, so I get asked a lot about casting from actors, especially those of us who didn't have a traditional theater or film school background. So the whole casting process is a bit of a, you know, enigma. Do you have any advice or, you know, how to make the casting world easier for actors? I don't really have a question. It's kind of more of a casting, please help.
You know, most of my experience, I've done some scripted, but most of my experience has been in the unscripted and factual. And in this space, you know, we're always rooting for you.
Yeah.
Right. So I can't speak for every casting director out there, but so part of it, I would quote, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman is just, you know, leave it in the room. You know what I mean? Come in and bring your best. And you have to, again, that goes back to, you know, self-talk is to shut out all the other noise, because it can be really intimidating. I've completely witnessed, and so you're not crazy if this has happened to you, you know, people in the waiting area trying to undermine you, sharing misinformation, seeing sometimes, you know, in the restroom and people making comments to each other, and it can get competitive and one-upmanship and all those things. So what I'm always going to say is just recognize it. And then just, you know, kind of put a force field around you and remind yourself, you know what? I'm here doing this thing that I love, working every day to be better at my craft. I'm so happy and grateful to be here. I can't wait to show them what I am bringing to this. And no matter what the result, you know, I brought my best to the situation. So, I mean, so just broadly, I would offer that. Sometimes too, it's even understand, because when you go in and it's super intimidating, one thing to remember, and this took a long time for me to even understand this, and I'm on the other side, was it's happening for a reason, because especially as the stakes get higher and there's a lot of money involved, that's the first line to see is, do you have the emotional bandwidth to handle what you say is your dream? And by the way, we all have to grow into it. But the thing is a film set is an intense environment. And everybody's there to learn and support. But it's, you know, so if you go weak because that was a brutally intimidating casting director, imagine when you're really on set. So that's one of the things we're really looking for, is to understand how you do, can you handle that? And it often gets a lot warmer as you go through the callback process. They were just like, you know, do you have it? Can you handle this? And the same thing with commercials. I mean, there's money involved. And so it's like, you know, you may be super talented, but if I think that you're going to shrivel the minute this happens, I've got to know that now. Because by the way, the casting director's reputation is on the line, right? So you have to think about, how does this all work up as we go? Two, especially in acting, it often takes multiple visits, meaning casting directors want to get to know you and get to know your work. And are you consistently showing up? Meaning, you know, like, was that a particularly good day? No, you know what? They're always on it. Like, they come in there, you know what? I see them getting a little bit better every time. That's what somebody wants to see. And then starting to build that faith and that relationship and say, yes, you know what? So-and-so's ready. And now we're going to, you know, move them along and forwards. So that, just in terms of the mindset and the strategy component that goes into the audition process, I think is really, really, really important. And I don't know how much that is shared. So happy. And then the other thing too, it goes into my on camera stuff, is just the prevalence now of the self-tape. And the difference between an acting self-tape, which you're going to be in front of a neutral background, the difference, you know, in comparing that to, you know, hosting or factual, where often you want your self-tape to reflect the environment that you're going to be in. So different. So understanding, you know, who you're doing this for and why. And same thing, you know, why headshots are different for actors than they are for, let's say, commercial actors or hosts, because we're conveying something, a neutral face versus projecting warmth and accessibility. And then the whole other side for actors is just comfortable with the technology side of it, which never, you know, wasn't an issue even 10 years ago. Now everybody has to know their microphones and basic editing software, et cetera, et cetera. And no matter where you are on vacation around the world, it's like, I've got my mobile studio with me because I'm so ready for that call from my agent or that opportunity lands in my lap. I'm on it, which is actually kind of a thrilling thing to know that you can go anywhere and not have to miss an opportunity, but you have to plan it.
That is great, great advice and such great statements about, the money involved. I think we get so, we being actors, so wrapped around that we are this like center of the universe and it's all about our art and our creativity. You're like, yes, but the business, there's business here. I was told by a casting director once, and it reflects so much what you just said about if you don't get the role, that's actually a good thing because you wouldn't have, like, the person who got the role was right for the part and you were not. And isn't that great? Because then the project is going to be better because the person who was right for the role got it. The project is better. I'm like, that is... Oh,
that's a really interesting way to frame that, because I do see that. The one thing you want to be careful, though, is because you're hearing that on the receiving end, meaning that I could still my gremlin on your behalf is, so I wasn't good enough. I wasn't the right one.
It wasn't right.
But I hear where they're coming from because, you know, Brian Pataka, who's an amazing acting coach, said the most wonderful thing about marketing, where he just said it's the notion of sharing your gifts. And so he said the same thing. It's like, you know what? I don't mind people unsubscribing from my list because I only want people... It's like, if people don't get me, I don't care about the numbers. I'd rather have like 5,000 like amazingly engaged people than, you know, an extra 15,000 who are like, meh. And I was like, oh, that's such a great way of saying that, which is tangentially a version of what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But it's, I've often said another way is it's like you go in and you do your best on any given day. And so at some level, especially when we get into callbacks, it's just like, it's if a menu and everything on that, you know, 5-star menu is delicious and phenomenal. It just happens to be that like that was the day that the chicken was the right dish, if that makes sense. I just meant like, to me, it's a little softer version of what you said was, it's just like, you're awesome. But for like, it just like, that was the choice. And that's okay. Cause again, it goes back to Philip Seymour Hoffman. You left your best in the room. And by the way, that means also other things will keep coming to you because your professionalism and your craft and all these things that are supremely important are noted and they are remembered and people do talk to each other and people do share notes in the best way.
Do you have any final words of advice or wisdom?
Oh, good Lord.
I know, right?
Oh, no. Now I'm like the dud spud. Oh, gosh.
Like so much gold just coming out of your mouth.
It's like one of my greatest hits of wisdom. Oh, Lord. Lord, 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 Lord. Well, I would just say that, you know, remind yourself you're awesome. You're good enough. I totally believe in the Japanese business philosophy of Kaizen, which is to try to be 1% better today than you were the day before. So that just keeps working. Oh, here's one. And it's not my quote, but I love, nobody ever failed in Hollywood. They just quit too soon.
Yes. I love that. I don't know who said that. But somebody told me that Hollywood and the entertainment industry is just this mini version of Survivor where you just have to outlast everyone else.
Yes. Okay, again, reframing from the aggressive, challenging Survivor version of that. My, just like, you know, staying true to you, but ask yourself questions. It's like, you know, what can I be doing better, differently to grow and improve, not beating yourself up, but to be like, I'm constantly growing as an artist. And to the whole point of your beautiful, wonderful podcast is I collect lists of late bloomers, of which I consider myself one, right? Julia Child was a late bloomer. And think about all the phenomenal actors. John Hamm was an acting teacher right before he got Mad Men. He stayed in it though. And, you know, he got that in his, mid-30s? Look at how... you know, James Gandolfini. So, just one actor after another who, you know, either broke through or, oh my God, I'm obsessed with Octavia Spencer for that. You know, she spent, 10, 15 years doing background parts? right? But consistently showing up, training, getting better, developing relationships. So that now I'm going on, I'm going to make your podcast like 7 hours long. But that would, another thing is to focus on relationships because it's a relationship driven business. And that goes back to what we talked a little bit about protocols for actors is that, you know your worth and your value and not in a egotistical or aggressive or sort of hostile me against them way. But there is often a lot of fear as an actor, meaning like I'm down here and all the gatekeepers and everybody in the industry are up here and they have all the power. And on a certain level, by the way, that is correct. Mm-hmm. But on the other is like you're meeting as a human being and you're bringing value to everything that you do. Right. I'm bringing, you know, value to this audition process. I bring it. So that goes back to, it's like, you know, the craft does matter on that set and on that stage. It doesn't exist in a vacuum.
If people want to reach out or are interested in working with you, where would they find you?
I'm very easy to find via my website, which is abelintermedia.com, ABELINTERMEDIA.com, because and all my contact information is there. I'm up on Instagram as Barbara_B_Abel. If you email me, I will respond. If you send me a DM, I'll respond.
Yeah, I'll put everything in the show notes as well, too.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. This was really fun. It went by so fast.
Awesome. I know. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. And thank you, Barbara, for being my guest this week. If you are interested in working with her, all of the links to find this lovely human being are in the show notes below. I hope you will all tune in next week for another episode of Second Act Actors. Bye.